Welcome to A-Crash Investigation, the podcast, the show where we dissect and discuss crumbling crashes in aviation history. I'm your host, Kai, and first off, Happy New Year. I hope that I am more consistent this year. And number two, in today's episode, we're going to be talking about United Airlines Flight 585. Don't forget to leave a like and subscribe if you enjoyed this on YouTube. And if you're listening on any other podcast listening platform, rate the podcast.
And before we continue, I just want to say that this episode was available on Patreon first. So if you can, please support the Patreon, as I'll use that money to buy more equipment so that this is a better experience for me and you. So please go check out our Patreon.
That's it. Let us get started.
Stay tuned.
And there's no fuel.
Closing in, looks like they've...
United Airlines Flight 585 was a scheduled flight for the 3rd of March 1991. Its origin was Greater Peoria Regional Airport in Illinois, the United States of America, and its destination was Colorado Springs Municipal Airport in Colorado, the United States of America. It had two stopovers, the first one being in Quad City International Airport in Illinois, the United States of America, and Stapleton International Airport in Colorado, the United States of America. It had 20 passengers on board and 5 crew members. The aircraft used was the Boeing 737-291, and the call sign was United 585. The crew and passengers. Harold Green, a 52-year-old, was the flight's captain. With more than 10,000 flight hours under his belt, including 1,732 on the Boeing 737, he was seen by his peers as a cautious pilot who adhered to standard operating procedures. The 42-year-old Patricia Edson was the first officer. With more than 4,000 flying hours under her belt, 1,077 of those being on the Boeing 737, the captain regarded her as an extremely skilled pilot. The flight. So at 23 minutes past 9 a.m., United Flight 585 took off from Stapleton International Airport in Colorado, the United States of America. At 9:30 a.m., the crew received an automatic terminal information service. This was called Lima, and the ATS info was 40 minutes old. Red flag already. This ATIS said wind 310 at 13 gust, 35. Low level wind shear advisories are in effect. Local aviation wind warning in effect, calling for wind out of the northwest gust to 40 knots, 74 kilometers an hour, or 46 miles per hour and above. So the crew added 20 knots, 37 kilometers an hour, or 23 miles per hour to their airspeed in order to land. At 28 minutes to 10 a.m., First Officer Edson communicated with the Colorado Springs Approach Control to let them know that their altitude was 11,000 feet or 3,400 meters. The Colorado Approach Control then cleared the flight to a visual approach to runway 35. The Approach Control also told United to contact the Colorado Springs Air Traffic Control. At 23 minutes to 10 a.m., Colorado Springs Air Traffic Control cleared United Flight 585 to land on runway 35. They also let the crew know that the wind was 320 degrees at 16 knots with gusts up to 29 knots. Whilst this info was being broadcasted, the aircraft was at 8,000 feet or 2,400 meters. First Officer Edson asked about the changes in airspeed from similar aircraft in their vicinity, and the air traffic controller told the first officer that a similar aircraft to theirs reported a 15-knot loss at 500 feet or 150 meters, a 15-knot gain at 120 meters or 400 feet, and a 20-knot gain at 46 meters or 150 feet. It's a lot. Hopefully you get it. First Officer Edson then responded by saying, "Sounds adventurous, United 585, thank you." At 20 minutes to 10 a.m., the Colorado Springs air traffic controller let United Flight 585 know that there was a Cessna aircraft at 11 o'clock, which was landing on runway 30. The crew could not see it, but seconds later, the air traffic controller let United 585 know that the Cessna was behind them. At 19 minutes to 10 a.m., the Colorado Springs air traffic controller directs United Flight 585 to a holding pattern, and First Officer Edson says, "We'll hold short of 30, United 585. And that was their last transmission with the air traffic controller. United Airlines Flight 585's airspeed was 155 knots, 287 kilometers an hour, or 178 miles per hour. At 18 minutes to 10 a.m., approximately 20 seconds prior to the crash, United Flight 585 entered a controlled 20-degree bank to line up with the runway. And First Officer Edson, in her words, said, "Runway is 11,000 feet long," meaning that there was like a minute possibility that they would overshoot the runway. Whilst they were doing that at 1,000 feet, 300 meters, the aircraft suddenly rolled to the right and nose down. I'm going to read some of the transmission, so if you're easily triggered by this, please skip. So the first officer says, "We are at 1,000 feet. Oh god, flip." Captain says, "15 flaps," meaning that their flaps should go to 15 so that they can attempt a go around. Then the first officer said, "15. Oh." Then the captain said, "Oh." And then, unfortunately, the altitude was decreasing way too rapidly. And at 17 minutes to 10 a.m., 41 seconds, United Airlines Flight 585 crashes nose down at an 80-degree angle, yawned 4 degrees to the right in Whitefield Park, which is less than 6 kilometers or 4 miles from the runway's threshold. Their speed when they crashed was 215 knots, 395 kilometers an hour, or 245 miles per hour. The aircraft was destroyed on impact, and there was a post-crash fire, meaning that unfortunately there were no survivors on board. And one person on the ground was injured, but they recovered successfully. The investigation was led by the NTSB, or the National Transportation Safety Board of the United States of America. The wreckage site was 3.47 nautical miles south of the south end of runway 35 and 17 nautical miles east of its extended center line. The crash site's elevation was approximately 5,704 feet or 1,739 meters above sea level. The engine shafts and three impacts showed an impact heading of 205 degrees, an 80 degree nose low altitude, a 4 degree nose right jaw, and a right rolling motion. The flight path was around 020 degrees magnetic, with an inclination of about 80 degrees down. The wrecked debris outside the crater was primarily to the northeast, despite the fact that the aeroplane was nearly vertical and nose down when it collided with the ground. Prior to ground contact, the usual acceleration was around 4 g's, necessitating a 16 degree angle of attack and 212 knots of speed. Witnesses reported seamless rolling and pitching from normal flying altitudes till ground contact. An overhead scan along the flight path revealed no debris that had detached from the plane before ground impact, and there was no sign of a fire south of the main impact crater, but there was a fire by the main impact crater. The aeroplane's fuselage showed severe accordion-like fore and aft crashing and overstress breaks. The impact crater contained the entire fuselage, save for two aft skin portions and tiny debris. Wreckage tests took place on site, at a local storage facility, and at several manufacturers' locations. An investigation of the fuselage revealed no pre-impact problems or malfunctions. The windscreen was extensively shattered due to overload. Consistent with terrain impact at high speeds? No. Due to the intensity of the incident and post-crash fire, the cockpit seats and rudder pedal locations were not documented. There was no evidence of damage from pre-impact strikes with birds or other items, and we know that birds are incredibly dangerous when it comes to flying. Some of the door assemblies were evaluated and all doors were found to be locked with no evidence of pre-impact problems. So the flight data recorder, FDR, and the cockpit voice recorder, because that's what investigators go for first. The onset of the loss of control occurred nearly 30 seconds after the flaps were extended to 30 degrees. The trailing edge flaps and leading edge devices would have begun extending immediately and would have reached the command position before the first officer's comment, "We're at 1,000 feet," which was made in a tone of voice that did not express unusual alarm. Thus, the safety board concludes that the flap operation was symmetrical and normal. The FDR data shows that the aeroplane deviated from its control flight due to a rapid rightward heading change. A lateral or directional flight control issue may result in such a maneuver, but a longitudinal control system would not. A malfunction would cause the plane to pitch, indicating an abrupt shift in its load factor. The FDR did not show any pitch changes. But what about a deployed spoiler? Because we know that that's also dangerous. It has caused the crashes of Air Canada Flight 621. However, there was no evidence that a ground spoiler was used to induce the lateral upset. The ground spoiler control valve slide indicated a retracted spoiler position. Furthermore, had either the flight or ground spoilers been extended during the flight, the aeroplane could not reach a 4G load factor at 212 knots without using the stall warning stick shaker. CVR did not detect any sound from the stick shaker. Let's talk about the radar. The earliest indication of a radar control issue was on February 25th, approximately 6 days before the accident flight. And I'm going to mention US Air Flight 427, which was a flight whereby the aircraft's radar malfunctioned and it went hard over in a direction opposite to that commanded by the pilots, which caused the plane to enter an aerodynamic stall from which the pilots were unable to recover and 132 people on board died, which made the crash the deadliest air disaster in Pennsylvania history. On that day, the flight crew encountered an uncommanded jaw to the right. And if you don't know, a jaw is a twisting or rotation of up to 360 degrees of a moving aircraft around a vertical axis. The crew then turned off the yaw damper and no uncommanded yaws were noted during the flight. After the flight, the United Airlines maintenance replaced the jaw damper coupler. However, on the 27th of February that same year, another crew reported an uncommanded jaw to the right. They also turned off the jaw damper to prevent the problem from occurring again. The United Airlines maintenance team changed the jaw damper transfer valve in the radar MPCU. There were no issues prior to the accident flight. The FDR data suggests that the aircraft diverged from a controlled flight due to a sudden rightward heading change, which is what I was saying before. Please note that because the NTSB analyzed US Air Flight 427 and East Wind Flight 517 incidents, that type of information is also going to pop up here. So yeah, the findings. Number one, the flight crew was certified and qualified for the flight. Number two, the airplane was properly certificated and maintained with accordance to FAA regulations. Number three, the airplane was dispatched in accordance with company procedures and federal regulations. Number nine, The flight crew of United Flight 585 recognized the initial upset in a timely manner and took immediate action to attempt a recovery, but did not successfully regain control of the airplane. Number 10. The flight crew of United Flight 585 could not be expected to have assessed the flight control problem and then devise and execute the appropriate response procedure for a rudder reversal under the circumstances of the flight. Number 11. Training and piloting techniques developed as a result of US Air Flight 427 show that it is possible to counteract an uncommanded deflection of the rudder in most regions of the flight envelope. Such training was not developed yet and available to the flight crews of US Air Flight 427 or United Flight 585. So the cause, the National Transportation Safety Board determines that the probable cause of the United Airlines Flight 585 accident was a loss in control of the airplane resulting in the movement of the rudder surface to its blow down limit. The rudder surface most likely deflected in a direction opposite to that commanded by the pilots as a result of a jam of the main rudder power control unit servo. Basically, the rudder jammed. And when they tried to bank to the left, out of nowhere, it banked to the right, and that's what caused the crash. The recommendations set out by the FAA require that Boeing develop a repetitive maintenance test procedure to be used by Boeing 737 operators to verify the proper operation of the main rudder power control. Require that Boeing develop an approved pre-flight check on the rudder system to be used by operators to verify, to the extent possible, the proper operation of the main rudder power. And number 3, conduct a design review of servo valves manufactured by Parker Hannifin having a design similar to the Boeing 737 rudder power control unit. That is the end of today's episode. I know that it's a lot. To summarize, this is all I'd like to say. Mechanical error, yes, mechanical error, manufacturing error. That's what it is. Just unfortunate that all those people died. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to follow the podcast on the podcast platform that you're listening to the podcast on and on Instagram. Yeah, thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you in the next one. Bye.